the first part everybody knows about how the plane down, but the other part is getting everybody out. So when all of a sudden you have 155 people who didn't care about each other, candidly didn't know each other, pulled together and did something in less than 7 minutes that changed history. I tell people, if you check your ego at the door and focus on the common mission, any team can accomplish anything. But you got to take the personalities out of it. You got to focus on the mission, and that's what happened.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Dave Sanderson, who's an internationally sought-out speaker and author, a leadership consultant, and host of his own podcast called Moments Matter. In our discussion, Dave talked to me about changing your state, how you can quickly change your state and grow from any experience. Now, he used a rather dramatic experience as a metaphor there, his own experience as a survivor of the US Airways Flight 1549 that landed into the Hudson River in 2009. That certainly was a life-changing experience for him, and it was a great metaphor for changing your state and growing out of any experience. We also talked about servant-based leadership, about giving others the opportunity to lead and serve. We talked about learning by modeling masters of their craft, and about how being resourceful and adding value first can get you in contact with anyone. So without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Dave Sanderson.
Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast from Charlotte in North Carolina in the USA, Dave Sanderson, who's an internationally sought-out speaker. He's also an author and a leadership consultant, as well as host of the Moments Matter podcast. Now, Dave's had an interesting experience a little while ago when he was on US Airways flight 1549, which was the one that ditched into the Hudson River, or was forced to ditch into the Hudson River in January 2009. And Dave has an interesting story to tell about that, because he was one of many people that played an important role in making sure that everybody got off that flight safely and survived it. And that was quite an inspiration. And also it inspired Dave to pursue his mission to encourage us all to do the right thing. So I'm really excited, Dave, to welcome you to the podcast today. It's a privilege to have you as a guest.
Jürgen, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be with you today.
Jamie Greenberg, who was our guest on episode 117, he introduced me to Dave and suggested we get you on the podcast. So a big hello to Jamie.
Shout out to Jamie. Yep, thank you, Jamie.
Now, Dave, you've had many years' experience in sales and leadership, and so I'm really looking forward to learning more about your perspective on those topics. But before we start talking about all those things, let's find out a bit more about your background and about you as a person. So as a young child, what did you want to do when you grew up?
Well, that's a great question, because we were having this discussion yesterday at church. Someone asked me that. I wanted to be an astronaut.
All right.
In the 60s, I wanted to be an astronaut and be one of the cool guys to go up.
Yeah, yeah.
Too much math and too much science. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to be an astronaut.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was one of my early ambitions too, and it was the same issue. Well, the science wasn't the problem, that the maths was.
Yeah. Yep.
So what direction did you end up taking when you discovered you weren't cut out for science and maths?
Well, my goal was to be in business, and that's what I went to the university for. But when I got out, it was not a very good business environment in the United States at that moment. So I got out, and my dad told me I had 30 days to find a job or I was out. of the house. And it was a, that wasn't quite an incentive, but candidly, I did not find a job in 30 days. So he was kicking me out of the house when my mother told him to go help me find a job. So my first job was in restaurant management. But I did that for about 2.5, 3 years, and then I pursued a career in sales, which I did for over 31 years, which was led me to be able to use some of the skill sets in business and learn some things about business and especially leadership. And in addition to that, while I was pursuing that career, I was also on the security team and then head of security for a gentleman named Tony Robbins. So I had the opportunity to learn leadership skills and a lot of different life skills being with me with Tony.
Mm, yeah, that must have been a really fascinating and highly valuable experience working for Tony Robbins for so long.
I was, that was an education among itself. I tell people that being around just somebody like that, you can learn and absorb a lot of things. But what I really look back on is not only being with him, but all the people that he was with, and having access and learning from these kind of people that you're getting an education that a college, you can't get at college or university.
Yeah. How did you come across the opportunity to work with Tony?
Well, that it wasn't my goal. I actually attended a Tony Robbins seminar back in the early 90s. And in the next year, I became the number one salesperson in our company. And I lost like 20 pounds. And I did, you know, just doing the whole thing. I'm like, wow, if I could.
Big transformation.
This,
yeah.
If I could do this by just spending, you know, 4 days with Mr. Robbins, what else could I do if I just go to more events? So I signed up to be one of his volunteers. And, you know, one of the people who would put down the brochures at midnight while everybody else is sleeping. And I did that, and we were in Maui, Hawaii, and I was in the room putting down brochures. And his former wife was approached by a couple men, and she needed to get away, and I helped her get away. And she came up to us and said, you handled that pretty well. Would you like to be on Tony's security team? I'm like, that's a lot better than putting down brochures. So, you know, she put me at the in the back in his green room at the back door for so far. 5 straight days, Jurgen, I didn't move. I sat there at the back door making sure no one got in, and I just watched how everything was transpiring. And fortunately, after doing that a few times, he had enough confidence in me to bring me more responsibilities. Ultimately, about 3 years, 4 years later, I was assistant head of security, and then I was honored when he made me the head of security for his organization. So I traveled and got the opportunity to serve him and serve all the people in his organization.
That's sounds like a great experience, and must have been a lot of fun as well.
It was a learning experience, and we had a lot of fun, and we traveled all over the world. That's, you and I were talking a little bit, but that's how I was going to Australia 2 times a year, because Tony frequents Australia. So I was very fortunate to be able to travel with him all over the world.
Mm. Well, our paths probably crossed then, because I've been to a couple of his events when he was in Australia.
You probably saw me up front doing whatever I was doing here.
Yeah. All right. So what do you do today, and why do you do it?
Well, when after the plane crashed into the Hudson River, or ditching, or water landing, whatever the term we want to use, I went back to my job in sales. I was in sales for a large, very large technology company. But I sort of had that awakening, that sort of that moment to say, you know, there's more out there than making money for multi-billion-dollar organization. So I, about 5 years after the plane crash, my wife allowed me to go out and start my own company. And so I was speaking. So I was started as a speaking career, but now it's more around teaching those leadership skills that I learned all those years by being with Tony and then business, and more around cultivating your own personal leadership skills. So because I think that's where leadership starts, is you got to start leading yourself before you lead other people. So I not only speak, I teach leadership and workshops. I have a course that's out now, and also around, I put together people and give them access and opportunities to the people I've been around. Because one of the things that being around, not only Tony, but the other Jim Rohn and my mentors, other people I've had the opportunity to be around, is they were paying it forward. So now it's one of my goals is to pay it forward to those folks who are coming behind us, so they can have not only the access to the knowledge and content that I was taught, but to the people, actually being able to have interaction with the people that I have had the opportunity to interact with. So that's what I do right now.
Sounds great. There's a lot in that. So you talk about servant leadership a lot. So tell us a little bit more about that, and what does it mean to you, and why is it important?
Well, servant leadership is something, a direction I started really taking over probably the last year to year and a half. I was always thought of myself as a servant leader, but until I sort of started really focusing in on, you know, how a leader needs to be stepping up, but also being able to step back and giving other people the opportunity to lead and the opportunity to serve and add value, is when I started realizing what the real value of that was. So I was very, very honored to be approached by a gentleman in Atlanta, Georgia, by the name of Don Barden. He was putting together a group of people of servant leaders, an NBA Hall of Fame player by the name of Dominique Wilkins, chief innovation officer at a company here in the United States called Chick-fil-A, and Steve Nendovic, Don, and Brittany, who is the focus, Brittany Tucker, who focuses on, you know, how to really level the mindset in me around, you know, the servant leadership of coming from your own personal leadership skills. So that's what we teach these skill sets now in a group setting for all these different aspects. So it's a very, very just honorable, and I'm just really blessed to be able to do that.
Mm. It sounds fascinating, and a lot of very accomplished names there as well.
When you put together some people who a Hall of Famer, who is, you know, what's the mindset of somebody who has to do what it takes to be a Hall of Fame athlete, and the person who is the innovation expert and or, you know, brain behind Chick-fil-A, which I don't know if there's Chick-fil-A in Australia, but it's one of the most successful franchises in the United States. And then Don, who teaches leadership skills to the U.S. Army Rangers. I mean, that's elite training. So being able to be around that and being able to share my skill sets with people like that and the audiences like that, it's a very humbling opportunity.
Hmm. So it's fascinating because I think you talk a lot about how you can learn from surrounding yourself with high achievers and modeling from masters at their craft. So tell us a little bit more about how you go about that. Do you have a specific process, how you tackle that?
So I actually was talking about this today on, I did a radio show here in the United States. It's Labor Day here in the United States. And I was doing a radio show and I was talking about, you know, one of the things my dad taught me when I got out of university, he said, you don't have to have everything in this world, but if you have access to people who have everything, you will be able to sort of grow in a way that you never thought you would grow. So one of my goals at coming out of university and investing in personal development the way I did was getting access to people's content and people up close and personal. So I've always made the extra sort of step to be able to be around people who've achieved great things. And you know, I started out with people just attending seminars, but then being up to get close and personal. So one of the things that I coach now and teach people, and one of the things I have a group now that I've started called Impact, is giving those people who want to learn these unique skills that these leaders from past years have given me, I give them not only that knowledge and share that content, but you know, once a month they get up close and personal with some of these leaders, and I'll bring them in and they get a chance to talk to somebody who's, you know, the top of their game, who's won 7 NCAA national championships, and what's her mindset? How does she get a group of women, especially in gymnastics, which is very a hot topic here in the United States with what's going on and the sexual harassment suits that are going on around that. And so it's amazing to be able to share that, my network. And that's one of the things I'm really passionate about now.
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful opportunity, and you know, you talk also about the importance of having a mentor, and you mentioned how your father kind of gave you that advice many years ago. Tell us a little bit more about how you go about building that network and you know, getting access to mentors.
Well, my first mentor's name was Bill, and I just met Bill. I met Bill at a Howard Johnson restaurant. This is part of the backstory that I don't talk about much, but you know, I met Bill there, and Bill was always coming in with his wife at that point, and he sort of took me under his arm and called me over, and you know, we would sit there and chat. And all I knew about Bill Juergen was he wore a flannel shirt, he drove a pickup truck, and I was like, you know, he's just a good old boy. We're down south here, right? This nice man, right? Drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes. But what I found out about Bill is Bill owned 80 movie theaters in North and South Carolina. And Bill was a multimillionaire, and Bill was like the Sam Walton of Walmart in Charlotte. He was the mover and shaker, but you would never know it because he was so unassuming. So he was my first mentor outside of university. And so he was teaching me these things that, you know, you couldn't pay enough money to learn. So he started introducing me to some of his people he was running with, and, you know, just being around them and listening. So I now, you know, one of my goals is whenever I have the opportunity to meet somebody, and Tony gave me this opportunity to meet some of the great financial leaders in this world. One was named Jim Hansberger. He was in Atlanta, Georgia, and I met Jim, and Jim invited me to come to his office and spend an hour and a half with him, just drilling him on the financial mindset. And it's like, so I love being able to do that, because I believe you can learn more by experiences of other people and modeling what other people have done, because as we all know, success leaves clues. I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, it goes back ages. But you know, if you're going to compress the time to get an outcome, why not go around somebody who's actually done it and they can shortcut or give you the shortcuts to be able to do it? It's like Tony said, compress decades into days.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful advice. And we, you know, we're doing a Model a Master's podcast series now with exactly that objective. So following that very process and trying to give access to people who are masters at their craft to our audience. So hopefully that adds a lot of value, but it's definitely a way to accelerate learning.
That's most definitely. Nowadays, things are, as you know, are moving so quickly, and it's no longer just localized. It's all over the world. You have to keep up. So to keep up, you've got to be around people who have done it. And that's one of the things you have to do to be able to not only affect change, but impact people's lives.
Mm. One of the other things you talk about, because you mentioned a lot of names there that people might find or might believe that it's really hard to get connection to achievers like that. You talk about how many phone calls would it take you to connect with the President of the United States or the Queen of England. So talk to us a little bit about that, because I was fascinated by that mindset of, you know, you can connect with anybody if you put your mind to it and to a little bit of work.
Yeah, one of the games and or skills that Tony would do with us on the security team, which I it's one of those things I'm sure he does with other groups too, but we would do it. He would come into us, we'd sit down and talk and chat. He said, how many phone calls do you think it would take to get to the President of the Queen of England or you know, anybody? I mean, you know, Bill Gates, right? Mm-hmm. And we're all sitting there struggling. It's like, well, I don't know anybody that can get me those people. Now we're sitting across a guy who in one phone call can get us someplace. But if you weren't resourceful. So he was trying to get us in our mindset. You've got to be resourceful now. So it's about building the network to the network. And that's what I wrote an article in the magazine years ago, back in the 80s, about that subject. It's about how to network the network. And all of a sudden sort of clicked in my head. It's like, you know, I have access to people around all the places that I go that I could get to pretty much anybody if I made the right moves and did the right things by them and added value to them first. So, you know, if I need to get to somebody, one of the things I was always amazed at when I was working for a company by the name of Oracle, my vice president, he's now a senior vice president, but my vice president then would be fascinated. He goes, how did you get to the CEO of this company? I mean, we've been getting to the CIO, but we never get to the CEO. I'm like, well, it's because I networked my network, you know, and he would never understand what that meant, but I was calling people around to get me to sit down with a CEO of a Fortune 50 company one-on-one, and they could never, his rest of the people could never get any past the CIO. Mm. So that's how I accelerated my sales career, is I was using this strategy on how to get to whether it was the CFO, CIO, CEO, whatever it may be of a company. And all of a sudden I'm sitting in the suite and they're out in the parking lot. And so that's how I really, you know, it takes some time. I'm not saying it's an overnight thing. But the first thing you got to focus on is you got to focus on how can you add value to that person first, you know, and they may need something, right? They may need you to get them in touch with somebody or connect. So I would always, before I'd ask, I would always give. And that's, you know, it's one of the driving values that I have. And one of the things that day on the plane that we were going down, one of the last questions I asked myself was, How can I add even more value and enjoy the process? How I kept saying that to myself in case I would come back out of a plane crash. And so it's been one of my driving forces. How could I add value first and enjoy it at the same time? And that what's been driving me, and that's what's helped me become who I am.
Mm. And of course, that is, to me, that's the essence of servant-focused right. leadership, isn't it? And adding value first. Value. Yeah.
Right. And but the other part of the equation I talk about, and I did in my TED talk, I reveal this, is that enjoying the process is as important, because, you know, if you're not enjoying the process, then you'll do it for a while, but then you give up on it. And, you know, I use the example of how many people go to work every day. They add value, right? They're making money for the company, but they hate their jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, 83% of the people, I saw a stat the other day, 83% of the people in the United States hate their jobs, but they still show up. It's because they're not enjoying the process, and eventually they will leave their job. So it's that enjoying the process is as important.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it kind of talks to the motivation that people have, right? So they have a necessity to earn money to support their lifestyle, support their family and so on. And so they go to this job they hate. But at some point, when they have other alternatives, then they'll leave. So
they have no loyalty. They'll leave. They'll jump ship. So that's why, you know, now, you know, I work for myself and building businesses other than what I'm doing, because I'm enjoying it. So it's not a job. And it's just... And I'll work 12 hours a day, right, on a holiday, because I'm having fun. I'm having fun talking to you. We would never have been able to have this conversation unless I took that mindset.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd like to explore that mindset a little bit more with you. So one of the things that you work with your clients on is finding their focus and purpose, right? And so a lot of that is around mindset. So tell us a little bit about, you know, how you approach that and what's important in that process.
Well, thank you. Because one of the things that, you know, and it all starts with asking better level questions. I mean, and I tell people that, you know, I didn't invent this. All I did was take the information from all my mentors and my coaches and mentors and basically just put it together in a way so people can understand it. And that's how someone did it for me. So, you know, it's just asking a better level question. So one of the questions, you know, and I ask this when I interview people, is, you know, what's most important to you and what has to happen for you to realize that? And the second question no one ever gets to. You know, they can say, well, this what's most important to me is I need to make a lot of money. What has to happen for you to have that feeling? And all of a sudden they have to think about the things that you have to go through it. And is it something of passion or is it just a necessity? Because, you know, if you're doing something for a passion, it's not work. So it's all the level of questions. And I've just taken the questions that I've been asking, I've learned through all these great people I've been around, and basically put them in a way that I can take people down a path. And I can tell people, I said, my vault is full. My goal for you is you need to get the key to open up the vault. And that's one of my missions right now, is helping people understand how to get the key and turn the key. People got the key, they just won't turn it.
That's right. Yeah. Well, is that... because they don't know how, or they're not sure where to look.
Yep. Yeah, they're confused. And they're confused because they're not clear about their mission. And that's, you know, one of the things that Tony did with us way back in the early 90s, but, you know, the first thing we did is we set our mission statements. And my mission statement hasn't changed in 30, almost 30 years now. So once it got clarity of the mission, it was very easy, but then you go sideways a lot of times in life, right? You get around the wrong peer groups. You get with people who are negative, people who want to bring you down. I mean, one of the things that I learned is, you know, you can be on the top of the heap, but there's somebody who wants to take you down. I think in Australia, I use this as an example of the tall poppy syndrome.
Yeah, that's right.
You get too big for your britches, and all of a sudden, someone's going to take you out. And so it's like a lot of people think too much of themselves. So I tell people one of the things I saw on the plane that day, which really was encouraging for the long term for me, is, you know, there were a lot of leaders on the plane that day and we were going down, and the big issue was getting out of a sinking plane. Well, people checked their egos at the door, and, you know, one of the things I tell people is, like, you know, I stepped back once because this guy seemed like he knew how to execute this better than I did. So sometimes leaders have to step back and let people do what other people do best to get the greater outcome on the mission. And the mission that day was zero fatalities once we got the plane down. Once the plane was down, people get out. Now zero fatalities to get everybody out. And so it's like, check your ego at the door is part of the uh, part of the mission.
Yeah, that's a really interesting take on that, checking your ego at the door, because ego is really important in some ways, but it often gets in our own way, doesn't it?
Everybody wants to be a hero. Everybody thinks they're Superman, right?
And, that's right.
And I've been that way. I'm not clean on this, Jurgen. I've been that way too. But once I sort of understood that, right, is stepping back sometimes, I mean, somebody else execute can make us all look a lot better. And that's what I started doing on my teams at Oracle. I made the shift, and that when I started making that shift, and is all of a sudden I started giving everybody else the credit. I'm just a guy. I'm just a quarterback in the background. And all of a sudden, everybody wanted to work with me, and all of a sudden we started producing at levels that I'd never been seen before in my life.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. You mentioned that your mission hasn't changed in 30 years, but of course we haven't really talked a lot about that momentous occasion when the plane went down into the Hudson River. I mean, that was a pretty traumatic experience, and even though the outcome was quite good, it must have changed things for you. So tell us a little bit about what changed as a result of that. I mean, talk us through very briefly about the event, because I can kind of remember it from the news broadcast, but I'm not sure how many of our audience listening would remember
Here's the short version. So it was about 60 seconds after we took office when there was an explosion. I was in seat 15A. And part of the backstory that I tell is I wasn't supposed to be on that plane. I was scheduled to be on the 5 o'clock flight, not the earlier flight. But I got on the plane early. So I think I was supposed to be on that plane for a reason and a purpose. But nothing extraordinary. I heard the explosion, looked out the window, lost an engine, no big deal. Because I know I fly 100 times a year. Planes have multiple engines. Yep. No big deal. But then one of the things that doesn't get talked about a lot is that bird strike was hit both sides of the plane simultaneously. So there's only one loud explosion. So everybody thought there's another engine. I think that was part of why nobody really got excited or went into a chaotic mode. But as we crossed over the George Washington Bridge and we were all in closely, I think roughly around 400 feet. And the bridge is roughly 600 feet up. So we were roughly 1,000 plus feet descending into the river. And that's when I think everybody, including me, I know I'll talk for myself, it was serious at that point. And you don't think you're coming back because you're going nose first into a river. But fortunately, when we got down, it was a hard hit. And when we got down and all of a sudden I looked up and I saw light through the window, water started coming in immediately. And I tell people there's two parts of the story where the first part everybody knows about how they got the plane down, but the other part is getting everybody out. And that's when all of a sudden you have 155 people who didn't care about each other, candidly didn't know each other, pulled together and did something in less than 7 minutes that changed history. And so I tell people if you check your ego at the door and focus on the common mission, any team, can accomplish anything. But you got to take the personalities out of it. You got to focus on the mission, and that's what happened. And it wasn't my goal to be one of the last passengers out, but when I got to the aisle, I was just getting out like everybody else. I heard my mother talk to me, who had passed away in 1997, in my head. I heard, if you do the right thing, God will take care of you. And I thought back on that over the last few years. Like, my mother would never tell me what to do. She would give me the option and make me make a decision, and knowing that every decision has a consequence. And it was a great learning experience. I didn't realize it until then. It was a great learning experience my mother gave me, that she made me make decisions and when I was young, which we don't do enough now as parents. I'm guilty of this as many as everybody else is guilty. We need to make our kids make decisions and have consequences for their decisions. But fortunately, my mother did that, and that's when I went towards the back of the plane. Water was about waist deep at that point. I got behind everybody because I wanted to make sure everybody gets out, because I knew I was alive, and started making my way out of the plane just like everybody else. And I looked to the right and I saw light on the right side. It happened to be the 10F door. And I started getting out like everybody else. When I started getting out, there was no room on the wing or the boat for me. It was already filled up. And that's why I was inside the plane roughly 7 minutes, waist deep in 36 degree water. And I was holding on to the lifeboat so they could have access to the wing to get off on the wing. So that's how I became one of the last passengers off the plane, which wasn't by design, but just by my happenstance.
And so you talked earlier about it was sort of 5 years before you really went out on your own then, and so what changed immediately after that that rather traumatic episode and what kind of led to the transformation of you going into your own business then, and how did that impact?
Well, two things really changed. First thing was I realized shortly, I mean, we're talking maybe that night or the next day, that my priorities were out of whack. I would schedule everything for my business, and then I'd fill in my family time when I had a chance. And I had two daughters at that point in high school here, one in middle school and one in elementary. And I was missing out on everything. I mean, I wasn't sending anything. And I realized, you know, I can't keep going. I can't get this time back. So I made a decision pretty shortly after the plane crash that I would schedule my time with my family first and schedule business around it, which candidly some people had challenges with, but I had to do that so I could be around for my family. The second thing that changed dramatically for me, which was probably the biggest change, and I talk about this in my TED talk, about my worldview changed. And people say, well, what's that mean? I said, well, you know, I was pretty judgmental way back then in my whole life. I would look at somebody or something and judge it pretty quickly and make a judgment. Okay, this is good, this is bad, right? Just make a judgment, like most people do. But I saw something happen in a green room of one of the TV shows I was on, and woke me up and about somebody who was judged quickly, but no one knew that person's backstory. And I found out that person's backstory, and I'm like, I felt bad for judging this guy. I mean, he was going through a divorce, he lost his job. I mean, he was going through a tough time in his life. And I say, how many times in my life are you going to have I judge somebody or something so quickly? And I've lost either a relationship or an opportunity to grow or opportunity to advance in my career. I said, if I change that one thing, what would happen if I change that one thing and stop judging things or people quickly? How could that change the direction of my life? And it did. And because that's why you and I are together today. If I was still judgmental, you and I wouldn't be talking. I would have my own little company. So once I stopped doing that and started judging people, like Martin Luther King said, by the content of their character, get to know them first and then make a judgment. That opened up so many opportunities and relationships, and I travel the world now and helping people, impacting people, and which allowed me to make the decision now, be 4 years ago, February, to start my own little company. But I still needed to get my wife to buy in. You know, the wife's got to buy in, and yeah, she was pretty comfortable. And so it took me a few years to figure that one out. I'm not going to tell you that was an overnight success. But finally, she bought in and allowed me to do this. And yeah, we took a step back financially, but all of a sudden, I get to schedule my time around them and what I want to do instead of someone telling me where I need to be. So it's a huge difference in the way you can be around your family and help and be around for what's important to them.
All right, and in that TED talk, or maybe in one of the other talks that I looked at, you talk about changing state quite a bit and growing from any experience. So, you know, you obviously that, you know, people don't have the sort of experience you've had regularly, I would say. Yep. But you kind of use that as a metaphor, and you talk about, you know, everybody has their own plane crash in a sense, yep, in life at some point, and how do you grow from those experiences? So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, one thing I realized is, and I did, you know, I've had the honor and privilege of helping and serving the American Red Cross raise money. And I've been spoken on their behalf over 170 times around the United States and Canada. And one of the benefits I get of that, Jürgen, is I get to go to places that they've been at. So, you know, I got to go to, you know, a place in Texas where they had a mass shooting. And I got to talk to people. I got to go to Oklahoma after the tornadoes and the eastern shore of North Carolina after Superstorm Sandy. And this last fall, a year ago this month, I went to Pompano Beach, Florida after the Hurricane Irma hit. And I talked to people, and I find a lot of people, like, go through these things, you know, these traumatic life events, go into a depressed state. And, you know, they don't have the strategy. They don't know how to get out of it because something's hit them hard. That's why I came up with the metaphor of everybody's got their own personal plane crash in life. Something's going to happen. Not anybody in the world is going to go through life unscathed. Something is going to happen. Whether it's, I just had a friend who just had a double mastectomy yesterday because she found out she had breast cancer. She was one of the top people in her industry. She's having her personal plane crash moment. So one of the things I talk about, and you know, I didn't, all, like I said before, all I've done is taken all of these knowledge from all of my mentors and coaches and and people and leaders I've been around and put them together is about state management. Is, you know, one way you could not go into a depressed state and grow from this experience is putting yourself in the appropriate state. And how you do that is, you know, for your physiology or the questions you ask yourself or what you focus on. And I show people how to do that very quickly. And I use it all the time before I go on stage or if I'm getting ready to talk to somebody or in my family, I'm ready to explode. I'm like, okay, step back. I need to get a better state, right? I need to get a better state right before I say something that's good. So I use the skills that I learned. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, people ask me, what does Tony want? I say, well, I think one of the things that Tony Robbins wants is people who attended his events use the things that he teaches, employ what he teaches. And not, I would say 95% of people who go don't ever do that.
Yeah.
I was one of the few that did it and I practiced it. And so being around him, I had to use it, right? I mean, I was forced to use the things he taught me, which was great for me because I had to put myself in a proper state and help people get in proper states or understand and change directions and things like this. So that's all I try to do now is help people understand these skill sets that they can use that are out there just to be able to grow from their personal plane crash experience instead of going to a depressed state.
Well, that's a really wonderful model, I think, of servant leadership that you're displaying there. I love that, you know, taking your experiences and sharing that and helping people deal with their experiences and this changing state. I think changing state is such a powerful tool. You know, as you say, take a step back from any situation and it's up to us to decide what state we want to be in, you know, what mood we want to be in.
Any moment in time, you can, you know, how many people go, they're all happy, the next moment they're sad as can be. And, you know, it's they control that mindset. It's taking personal responsibility. I think that was one thing that I'm trying to teach my kids right now is they're fighting me on it. And I was a kid once too, so I probably fought my parents on it. My dad and mother always told me, no one owes you anything. You're responsible for everything in your life. Your government's not going to ever bail you out. No one's ever going to bail you out. You're responsible for your own. So I've always taken personal responsibility as one of the key things that we all have to employ if we're going to be successful in life. And so taking personal responsibility for your own state is one of those things.
All right. Well, this has been fascinating, Dave. I really appreciate you sharing all this with us. I think it's time we moved on to our Buzz Round, which is our innovation round designed to help our audience. And, you know, they're primarily innovators and leaders in their field, but we want to get some tips from your experience. So I've got a series of five questions and hopefully give us some really insightful answers that will inspire people that go out and do something awesome today.
So I hope I can. Let's go. Let's rock it.
Yeah. What's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think you have to be creative. You have to open up your mind to other opportunities and possibilities. When I, like I mentioned, one of the people that I'm with now in Atlanta, the chief innovation officer at Chick-fil-A, is one of the people that, I don't know if you know anything about Chick-fil-A, but they have the cow as a front man for chicken.
Mm.
You know, and people were fighting that, he said internally, but he and a couple other people came up with this concept is, you know, eat more chicken when you're a cow.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, you may have seen that. And so he had to open up not only his mind, but his team's mind and his company's mind is now one of the most successful ad campaigns in the history of the world. So you got to open up your mind and be creative and be innovative.
Yeah. And think outside the box. Yeah. That's a really good example because it's kind of, okay, this is the opposite of what we're actually promoting, but it actually worked really well as an advertising campaign.
Yes, it does.
Right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Well, I tell you, that's a great question because when I go to hear other people speak and go to other people's events, that opens my creativity massively. And I knew that, but about 3 years ago, I went to a Brendan Burchard event in San Francisco, California, and it opened my mind to other opportunities that I wasn't thinking about how I could really start growing and impacting other people's lives. So the way I do it is I go to other people's events. I invest my money to go to these places so I can hear other people's ideas or content or their concepts, and how can I assimilate those into my mission, in my direction.
Yeah, so it's the model of masters approach, isn't it?
That's right, most definitely. Modeling the masters, exactly right.
Excellent. So what's your favourite tool or system for helping you improve your own productivity and allowing you to be more creative or innovative?
You know, one of the tools that I use, and it's going to sound funny, but I use LinkedIn. I go on LinkedIn, and I'm using that pretty exclusively now because I find people on LinkedIn, they're there for business, number one. But number two, they are so creative. I mean, there's people out there doing so many unique things and how to approach the business or approach the way they do customer service. I mean, that I got in touch with somebody who's one of the top customer service experts in the United States. He LinkedIn, and I went spoke at his seminar last year or 2 years ago in Cleveland, Ohio. He got to meet all these innovative people around how to be more innovative in customer service. Now, I would never thought I'd be around that. So I would say that's the tool that I use right now to open my mind up to find people who can open my mind up.
Great advice. Yeah, LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn is actually a really underutilized resource in today's social media world. In particular, like you say, it's business oriented, and if you approach it from, you know, you talked earlier about adding value first and giving others the opportunity to lead and serve. So if you take that approach on LinkedIn and start building relationships there, it can lead to some interesting things, like you've said.
Most definitely.
All right. What's the best way to keep a client on track?
Well, I think one of the things that I try to do over the last several years, people have been approaching me to help them start a speaking career because I did it from scratch. Not to what I'm doing. It's like, what was the strategies that I used to do that? So, you know, it's just, I've taken on a few people who, and I'm open to doing that, but how I keep them on track is always circling them back down to the mission, always getting back down to the mission. Because when I did that with my teams at Oracle, and you know, when I figured out when I strayed at Oracle, when I was in sales, is when we were losing. So I kept people focused on the mission. And the mission may not be selling today. The mission might be an education today. As long as I kept doing that, we were always making progress. And, you know, as we know, you know, change is inevitable. Progress is not. It's all about making progress. So that's what I was always trying to do, is keeping people back to the mission to make progress. And the goal is to keep making progress to the point to where you finally win.
Great advice. So really, it kind of comes back to what Simon Sinek preaches, which is, you know, start with why and then keep that focus.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. I got the opportunity to be around him in Canada a couple of years ago. And that's why I say, get around people who can change your mind on things. He's one of them. He was one of them.
Yeah. Great. All right. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think one of the things you can do to differentiate yourself, and this is going to sound trite and basic, is be congruent and be authentic. I think a lot of people try to be something they're not, but if you're congruent and authentic consistently and people see that, you will stand out. And I'll give you a perfect example. I'm in a mastermind group with a gentleman named Aaron Walker, and I tell people, you need to get around a mastermind group to open your mind up to people to hold you to a standard. But yeah, he has the standards that he holds to. And I asked him the other day, and one of the things he talked about is when he goes to an event or a seminar, that he won't get his picture taken with a female because he respects his wife too much. He doesn't want her to see he's out there in, you know, Burbank, California. He's around all these beautiful women. That's not what's congruent with his life and what he wants for his marriage. I said, that's a perfect example of how to be a congruent, authentic, and that's why Aaron stands out. And to be one of the top entrepreneurs in the country.
Fascinating. Yeah. All right. This is really great, Dave. Thanks for getting us through the buzz and our innovation round. So what's the future for you and your business?
Well, we're taking a lot of different direction with my business. We just rolled out a course a few months ago called Cultivating Personal Leadership. And I basically took these 12 tenets that I used that day on the plane to not only hopefully help and lead it sometimes, but I took these personal leadership tenets because people are looking for that. And I think a lot of, especially Gen Xers and millennials, they think they're leaders, but they don't understand why or how to be a leader. So that's why I did this. But one of the real focuses now, as I mentioned, this exclusive group I call Impact put together, where I'm giving people access to my team. I mean, and that's, I would have never done that before, but having one-on-one access to the leaders and mentors I've been around is something that I'm really passionate about. So people can then you know, learn from them directly and through me. That's really, I'm really passionate about it. But also, I'm working with a group of leaders out of Raleigh, North Carolina, and we're, you know, really looking for people who want to take these leadership skills and they teach and I teach and build a business on how to teach people how to be leaders. So I'm really passionate about that likewise, and using different mindsets and mind frames how to do that. So those are the three or four things that I'm doing. And my next book, we're getting ready to put out next year. So that's really exciting. Likewise, it's going to be How to Grow Through Traumatic Life Experiences. So we're a lot on the table right now, Jürgen. I'm trying to keep going, man.
Keeping busy. Yeah. So looking forward to, so there is a book out, which we'll link to in the show notes, called Moments Matter. And you've got a second one coming out. So we'll keep an eye out for that one as well.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. What's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation and productivity?
I would say when I give advice, number one, and I'll go back to a conversation I had with Joe Norman Schwarzkopf years ago, and he told me his strategy on leadership when I was one-on-one with him. He said he had to keep his troops. When he won the war in Iraq so quickly, he had to keep his troops focused on the purpose they were there. People would come to him every day with their problems, and he kept reminding his troops of how does this contribute to kicking Saddam out of Kuwait. That was the number one mission. He said that's. And then, so he said he kept doing that over and over. And he said within 60 days, they went in, conquered, got out. So I tell people, I think one of the things I learned from one of the great leaders, military leaders in the United States history, is keep people focused on the purpose. And one of the great things leaders can do, and then step back, let them execute, course correct if you need to, but let them execute on it. And one of the questions I ask all the time, Jürgen, in my interviews is, you want to be in charge, you want to be in control. And that's one of the things my first mentor, Bill, asked me when he took me under his wing. And, I thought I wanted to be in control, but he said, great leaders really want to be in charge. They want to step back and let other people control. So that's, I would say that would be my number one piece of advice. Make sure people are focusing on the mission and remind them of why they're doing this. Just like you said with Simon Sinek said, the why.
All right. That's great advice. Thanks. And this has been really great, Dave. Where can people reach out and say thank you for what you've shared with us today and for your time?
Well, thank you. If they would want to check out my website at davesandersonspeaks.com, and a lot of my material is out there. But what I'll do also, Jürgen, is I'm honored to be with you, and you're based in Australia, and I'm coming to Australia next year. So if anybody's listening wants to text the number 797979 and put the word BRACE, the number 4 impact, and I'll send them a free copy of the free video from one of my course called Overcoming Adversity in Challenging Times. It's a way that they can not only connect with me, but understand some of the background of how I came to some of these strategies that I use. So if they do that, and they go on my website also and check it out, just message me, and I'll be more than happy to send them any content or material they like to see. It's be my gift to them.
That's great. So that was 797979, the
right,
SMS.
They just text SMS, but the word BRACE, B-R-A-C-E, the number 4, impact, I-M-P-A-C-T, and within seconds, they'll get a link to the video, and be able to check it out.
All right, and we'll put all that in the show notes as well so people can follow through there straight away. So finally then, Dave, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast, and why?
I tell you, I mentioned his name a few minutes ago. I would recommend Aaron Walker. And he is one of the top entrepreneurs. He's based in Nashville, Tennessee. Yes, I am connected with him on my mastermind group. But he was one of the people who was masterminding with a guy by the name of Dave Ramsey. I never heard of Dave Ramsey, one of the great financial minds in the United States out of Nashville. He's got a radio show. He's got over 600 channels he broadcasts to. But Aaron was with him when Dave was just starting out. So Aaron brings a lot of wisdom from one of the top financial masters and about servant leadership and stewardship is probably a better way to say it, taking care. So I would recommend Aaron Walker.
All right. Great. Well, hopefully we can get an introduction from you. And Aaron, if you're listening to this, look out for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Dave Sanderson.
I'll make it happen for you.
Excellent. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate that. So thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us today on the Innova Buzz podcast. This has been really fascinating. You've got a fascinating backstory an interesting experience that, you know, I really admire the way you've taken that and you've turned it into a positive and really helped support your own mission to help people grow and develop and be a servant leader in that sense. So thanks a lot for coming on and sharing that story with us today.
Thank you, Jürgen, for having me. I'm blessed to be able to do it. Thank you.
Yeah. So all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Same here. I'll let you know when I'm in the Sydney area next spring, or it'll be fall in your world. But before, I'll let you know, see if we can get to Melbourne or that area.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get together and
definitely
have another conversation face-to-face this time.
That would be great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
All right. Have a blessed day. It's morning there, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. It's just starting out Tuesday morning.
Tuesday morning. Well, we're going into dinner time now, so I'll be going to dinner.
All right. Have a
blessed day. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. You too.
I hope you enjoyed meeting Dave and hearing both his fascinating story and the great advice he shared with us. What particularly resonated with me was his message of servant-based leadership, of taking responsibility for our own state or mindset, and of adding value and being resourceful. And yet, there was so much more in that interview. I'd love to know what you took away from Dave's episode today. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Dave Sanderson. That is DaveSanderson. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Dave Sanderson. We'll also have a link there to the SMS contact with the offer that Dave gave us and contact information for getting in touch directly with Dave. Dave suggested I interview Aaron Walker of View from the Top on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Aaron, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Dave Sanderson. Stay connected. Head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts and subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you make sure you'll never miss another episode. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic LinkedIn community at the Transformational Marketing Academy. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMAC. It's free to join. Hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.